the world is going to blow up because the magic egg ball told me.
Is this the Wood Stove House?
Wood Stove House.
Wood Stove House.
Podcast.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
The United States of America.
Planet Earth.
This is the Wood Stove
House.
Are you in line for the Lancaster train?
I'm going to Middletown, but I think it stops in Lancaster.
Yeah.
Hi, Jason Mundock from Woodstove House. September 29th, 2014 was my 43rd birthday. It was also the day that the final episode of Around the Woodstove was published. Around the Woodstove was a podcast where I interviewed musicians and performing artists about their work and the Lancaster, Pennsylvania art scene. My guests included people who live in and around Lancaster, people who were from the area but were living elsewhere, and sometimes people who had no connection to Lancaster whatsoever, except that they were performing here. This is not that podcast. It is published by Woodstove House, and it does have something to do with Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Intrinsic to the human spirit, nestled in the depths of human conscience, lies an unadulterated and obstinate keenness for youthful innocence and discovery. For us, a silent siren sound, save for oil-soaked hands, skin knees, and sun-drenched atlases. White-knuckled, sunburnt, and wide-eyed, we spent a summer drowning out the incessant whir of routine. My brother and I purchased a Montana Red 1970 Volkswagen in November 2015. We named her Wendy after the lifeguard in the Sandlot. The flat four was seized, but structurally, the 45-year-old vehicle looked relatively intact. We spent winter's unseasonably warm afternoons camped out in our parents' driveway, cleaning out a decade's worth of soot, soil, and sand from the interior. There, we found a fortune cookie which read, "If you have great ambition, take as big a step in the direction of fulfilling it." And goddammit, we try.
Tyler Naples, writer, photographer, owner of a Montana Red 1970 Volkswagen.
It was 25 years ago this month, March 1991. I was attending college at Clarion University, one of the small Pennsylvania state colleges, and ended up going on a trip to Washington, D.C. for an art conference. I'm not quite sure why I was going on this trip. I wasn't an art major, and I was in the second semester of sculpture classes that I was just taking as an elective. I was thinking about becoming an art major, but everybody else who was going on the trip were pretty serious about what they were doing, and I enjoyed it, but I'm not sure that I ever really seriously considered a career in art. There were nine of us students, four guys, five girls. I remember all the guys who were on the trip. It was me and Greca, Bird, and Roland. I don't remember the girls. I remember a couple of them, but I couldn't make a list. And our professor, her name was Emily. She was in her mid-20s. I was 19, so she seemed considerably older than I realize now that she was. We loaded up in a college van. We spent, I don't know, 5-6 hours driving to D.C., when we got near the city, we were listening to a radio station, the alternative rock station. Is it HFS? And they premiered Losing My Religion by REM. It was the week or the day that Out of Time came out. And I was really excited to hear the new REM song. So everybody in the van got quiet and we listened to that song on the radio. We got to the hotel, we checked in. We had two suites, one for the boys, one for the girls. They were nice. There was a pull-out couch, a couple bedrooms, a kitchen, right in the heart of Washington, D.C. We were near the conference center, but ironically, we never even stepped foot in the conference. A lot of people from the conference were staying in the hotel. And the first night we were there, we went and got some groceries, and we got a lot of alcohol. Most of the people on the trip were 21, just 21. So we just chipped in a bunch of money, and I don't even know how much food we bought. But I remember going to the liquor store and it taking a few trips to get the booze out. It seems as though Emily's motivation for this trip was really just to visit friends. She had gone to a college in Virginia, and she had a lot of friends who were going to be at this conference. And I remember she was telling us that she had gone to college with some of the guys from GWAR and that they were going to be there. And she was excited to see them again. She was good friends with them. I was never really a GWAR fan. I knew who they were. But as I heard about the band over the years that followed, I would always think of her. One thing I do remember is that Emily came back and throughout the weekend, and she took us to some openings that were happening around the area. So we went to a few art galleries that were having openings that were somehow connected with the conference. And I do remember one of these openings. We went in. It was really cool glass art. I'd never seen anything like it before. It was a whole show of glass, these little figurines and these little designs. It was very abstract and kind of ethereal. But the thing I remember most from it was that they had cheese. They had a lot of cheese, and there was a big wheel of cheese at one point sitting on this table. And one of the guys I was with from our group, Roland, he wore a long black trench coat. And he asked me to stand in front of the snack table at some point and just sort of maybe talk with someone else, I'm not sure. And then we left, and Roland had that big wheel of cheese in his coat. And we went back to the hotel at some point, and we ate a lot of that cheese while drinking a lot of the alcohol. Wondering if you would do me a favor and answer the following question in a voice memo and then text it to me, knowing that I will likely use your response on a podcast. The question is, what is your favorite podcast and why?
My favorite podcast is called Love and Radio, and it's a bunch of featured short stories that are personal and riveting. And they always make me think and question and explore different themes that I normally don't think about on a daily basis. So I always find myself talking and sharing them with other people afterwards. So that's how I know I really love it.
Podcast that I've really enjoyed listening to lately is called You're the Expert. And the basic premise of the show is a panel of 3 to 4 comedians are tasked with finding out what a particular expert does all day. This is done in a series of yes or no questions and short trivia. And I think one of the reasons why I enjoy the podcast so much is it exposes me to these really niche areas of science, areas that I haven't been exposed to or otherwise would never be exposed to. And it does it in this really interesting, engaging, and humorous way.
My favorite podcast is This American Life, because it's always interesting, always a unique look into humanity, what makes us tick and why we do the things we do. And I like that the reporters often include themselves as subjects. So as a listener, I feel like that they're sharing parts of their lives too. It's a kind of a courageous thing to do. And it makes a listener feel like that we're all part of the same big story.
My favorite podcast would have to be WTF, hosted by Mark Maron. It is Mark Maron doing interviews with specifically comedians, comedic actors, and musicians. Mark falls into all those three categories himself, so he gets to a place with his guests that is, I feel, remarkable. He can get to the reasons that they do what they do. He shares, he's very self-deprecating, and he shares his failures with them, and that kind of lets them open up to what they do or don't like about their own careers. It's just, it's really, really interesting, and he's a fantastic interviewer. So that would be my favorite.
One of the girls who was with us was from DC. I don't remember her name, but she was like an alternative girl. She wore all black, and she wore a lot of makeup and sort of a post-punk, gothy kind of person. And she was from the area, so she took us around on Saturday's beautiful day. She took us around the city to these record stores and, you know, punk rock stores and things like that. And we shopped a little bit, and we checked out a lot of cool shops. And being from where I'm from and going to school where I was going to school, we just didn't have access to that sort of thing. So I remember that being very eye-opening for me. We went to Tower Records. I hadn't been in a Tower Records before, but I bought Heaven or Las Vegas, the Cocteau Twins album, and I bought the cassette and was just really excited about that, and to actually go into a record store and have that be very accessible. Bird and I were in a photography class, and so we had our cameras, 35mm cameras, and we took a lot of photos on that trip for some assignments that we had due. They were very cliche photos of like homeless people and tall buildings from down below angled up at this blue sky, but it was fun anyway. I mean, it was fun to do.
They've been talking, and they said they need a place to stay. Is it okay with you if we have them stay over at our house? And I was like, I don't care.
Right. You know?
And so I only saw like maybe the last couple songs, so I didn't even really know the music or anything, or didn't know who Descendants were. And then they stayed at their house, and we just hung out. And Dave Smalley, that's cool, because, I mean, Dave Smalley's like a legendary guy.
Yeah.
In the punk scene. They just came over and hung out, and then left the next day. I had to work the next morning, actually, so I got up and left before they did, and I didn't even see them leave. And then Bill asked Diana to come down to Nashville, where they were going to play down there. So she and I went through the whole thing trying to find my car. There's no way either of our cars were going to make it to Nashville. They were just old and beat up. So we tried to rent a car and couldn't because we didn't have a credit card. But we could rent a U-Haul truck. We tried the smallest truck there was. Little box
was it a
truck.
Van or was it a truck?
It wasn't a van, it was a truck. And I got in and I was like, you know, I don't think I can. I mean, it wasn't the smallest, it was the next size.
It had
size
to be like an 18-foot.
It's the size of like a UPS truck, one of those.
Yeah, like if you're moving a 1-2-bedroom apartment, yeah. You get that.
And I remember we actually got in and I maybe even started it up. And I was like, you know, Diana, I can't drive this all the way to Nashville. I'd never driven a truck like that. And we were on a time, we had to get there. It was like they were playing that night. So Diana's manager, or one of the assistant managers, somebody at Arby's where she worked, rented a car for us on her credit card. And we gave her the money. And we got the car.
That's bold.
And we drove down there and got to where they were playing. They were playing.
You remember the club?
I'm almost positive it wasn't Exit Inn, but it was that little place across the street. Whatever it was back then.
Yeah.
I think that's where it was, because I remember, you know, I never thought of it till now, because I remember parking. I just remember sitting outside with them, and the club was in a little bitty place here, Or maybe they did play Exit In and we were just across from it. But I remember a little place here and it was just like a parking lot, like a ledge or something we were sitting on. So they could have played Exit In because it would have been straight across from us. Right. And we were sitting here and there was this little club next door. But I'm thinking they, I don't know why, I picture them playing.
Would you remember the inside of the room?
We didn't go in. We got there just as the show got over.
Oh. And you drove all the way to Nashville and didn't even see the show.
No, I never saw a full show of theirs till Memphis. Then Bill wanted, since we didn't get to see them really, we stayed somewhere, I don't know whose house it was, somebody in Nashville, and then we, I think it was Nashville we stayed in. And then we got up the next day and drove to Memphis.
On the rental car.
In the rental car, so we took it an extra day and didn't let anybody know. We didn't like rent it for an extra day. So in essence, it was, if we'd gotten pulled over, it probably would have shown up as stolen or something. And
it probably would have shown up as just being late.
Yeah. And we went down there, and then that's the first time I saw a full show. And then we just saw that show, then we drove all the way back straight through from Memphis to Louisville in our rental car because her friend wasn't real happy. And then after that, I think the next time we saw them was, it had been a year or two later. They played in Newport. It was a club right across from Cincinnati. And I had a different car by then, but it still shouldn't have probably been driven like that. It was the one that I, it was a Dodge Colt, and you had, I had a milk crate behind the passenger, no, it was behind the passenger seat to keep it upright. It came with the car.
It's like a feature.
And we drove that from Newport. They played in Chicago the following night. So after the Newport show, we got in the car and followed them to Chicago. We got to Chicago and stayed in some warehouse. Some friend that lived in this big warehouse apartment.
What year was that?
Probably 1989, maybe.
So when you first met them, it was like 87.
It was the first all tour that we would have met them on. No, probably 88. We went to Chicago. That's where Diana and I, we were driving, and we couldn't pull over and stop. If they didn't stop, we wouldn't want to lose them.
Right, you didn't have
phones.
No
GPS or anything. But I remember I was just so tired of driving, and she and I switched places, and it was a stick shift too. We switched places while going like 70 miles an hour down the highway, following them so we wouldn't lose track, just because I was so tired that like she got up and I we crawled over each other and switched places while we were driving. And then we got there and stayed at somebody's place.
Suzanne Mundock. Artist, mother, middle school library aide, my wife of 18 years, and a fan of the band All. In the evenings, Friday and Saturday, there were a lot of artists in the hotel that were having parties. And so we would float around from floor to floor and room to room and go into these hotel rooms, and there would be artists with slide projectors. Artists were carrying around their slide, I don't know what they're called, even cartridges. You know, these things filled with slides that you would sit on top of a slide projector, and then you would sit there and, you know, drink or whatever, and the artists would go through their slides projected on the blank walls of the hotel room after all of the corporate art had been taken off the walls, and people would critique it and talk about it, and it was great. It was just like this whole sort of hotel of art and artists and parties, and I just remember thinking, this is really, really fantastic. For some reason on Saturday night, we had a lot of fruit in the room. Granted, the whole weekend is kind of blurry for me, but I remember we had fruit for some reason, cantaloupes, melons, like big fruit, and somebody had gotten this not so great idea looking back, but seemingly great idea at the time, to put or draw a bullseye on the wall and to throw the fruit at the wall from across the hotel room, the suite, and have a little game to see who could, you know, hit the bullseye and who could score the most points. So there was a lot of fruit that was destroyed, and when that was no longer exciting, we must have been on the fourth or fifth floor. Some of the fruit did go out the balcony, in sort of a David Letterman kind of way, dropping some watermelons from this fifth floor balcony down to the street. As far as I remember, nobody was injured. But I do have a very, very vivid memory of seeing a couple of watermelons flying out of the window or the balcony door. And I do remember Birdman laughing a lot. I remember waking up on Sunday morning on the pullout couch in our suite. The party had gotten pretty out of control, and I don't really remember how it ended. But I remember waking up, and sleeping next to me was this girl who was part of our group. She had long red hair. She's very beautiful. And she was way, way out of my league. And so I knew nothing beyond us passing out happened. But I remember thinking, well, that would have been cool. We drove back to Clarion that day. Nobody felt very good. And I don't think, looking back, that I had really gotten out of that trip what the university had hoped we would. But I did have a new Cocteau Twins tape to listen to in my Walkman, and a few blurry memories that would last at least 25 years.
I think Tauntaun is the best band in this town. The best seven-person band in this town. The best seven-person band in this town right now, where one of the main singers has a Tom's Bread shirt on, spelled T-H-O-M, not T-O-M. There's a lot of great seven-piece bands in this town that have a T-O-M Bread shirt on, but not T-H-O-M.
Right. What are three words to describe Tauntaun?
Oh, God. You have to ask someone else in the air.
Give me three words to describe Tauntaun.
Ah, it's hard.
Oh, that's hard.
It's really hard.
Stoned? Is that a good one? Does that apply? Ask each one of us for one.
Weed, sadness, and television.
Sadness and television. Sadness.
Weed.
Sadness. Television.
No, that could be almost be like you have it out of order. It's sadness, then weed, then television.
Give me three words that describe Tauntaun.
Brazen, enthusiastic, spontaneous.
See, that's nice. Your friends couldn't come up with three except for like weed and sad and TV or some shit. This was good.
Okay.
When you hear the word Tauntaun, what do you think?
Let's go with heartfelt, deeply deep.
Oh, those are two. That counts as two. Yeah. I really liked the way they sounded with the acoustics setup. It was like you could really, I don't know, I could hear the music better that way. And it really worked. Like, I think it was cool having seven pieces doing acoustic instruments, because it made for a really full, rich sound, but it wasn't, like, overpowering. I mean, Tauntaun sounds great in a huge room with a big system. But when you have seven people playing loud electric guitars in a small room, it can be a bit much. But this was really a cool sound. I hope they do it again, even though it sounded like Jordan wasn't that interested in doing it. I'll always be a little bit partial to get well, though.
The feeling you get in your face when you laugh is an unsettling thing. A foreign response to the world and the want to be loved, or at least to be seen. Drinking alone is something you do to forget that you used to have friends.
On March 25th, 2016, Tauntaun performed an all-acoustic set of their entire double album, You're Not Doing It Right, at a tiny modern concert produced by Series 42 and hosted by Modern Art, 529 West Chestnut in Lancaster. Find all of them on the internet. Thanks to Scott, Jordan, Katie, Aaron, Rob, and Joe for your thoughts about the band. And thanks to Sarah, Tyler, Suzanne, and Pat for your favorite podcasts. Music in today's episode by Jay Mundock, Tauntaun, and All. This podcast is produced by Woodstove House, online at woodstovehouse.com.
If you have great ambition, take as big a step in the direction of fulfilling it.